Jonathan, welcome to Talk Satellite.
Thank you, Kevin. I appreciate being on with you. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Please update us on SSTL as an organization and how it fits into the echelons of Singapore.
Thank you, Kevin. So the SSTL has continued to grow over the years. I think strength on strength based on all the various activities that has encompassed in our ecosystem. We work very closely with all the elements of the space sector here. Work very closely with our government space organization, the Office for Space Technology and Industry, or OSTIN, and that is to drive our ongoing international engagements with a variety of countries and partners and stakeholders. The other element, of course, that we're growing heavily with is our industry base. We've always started off and we remain as a core space trade federation, so that remains with us even after we restructured a couple of years ago. And with that, I think we continue to encompass and bring to our fold many industry partners, space companies, and even adjacent industries that are doing things and activities that are related to space. So we do want to grow that industry core and provide market access to a lot of our stakeholders as well. We have started to drive heavily is innovation in space. That actually is quite central to us today. Today we leverage on our innovation platforms. We solve and run innovation activities for partner organizations, various industry groups, and country groups as well, that may want to potentially leverage on satellite technology to enhance their core activities as well. So really, it's to demonstrate that space and satellite technologies are useful and can be certainly leveraged on for the betterment of their engagements and activities. The last piece that we continue to also strongly endeavor to support is in space and satellite training and education. We successfully spun off our training arm, Space Faculty, that's a separate entity that is also growing quite significantly as it encompasses all our training, education and outreach programs. And today they have built their own additional programs that serves a very wide range of people and age groups, from young students all the way to mid-career engineers. Learning is a lifelong journey, so we continue to support them and as they also spearhead new initiatives around the globe.
Singapore has a strong desire to keep ahead in technology developments. Where are the key areas of space and satellite that you now focus on?
I think one of the important areas that we always look at is in the applications of satellite technologies. Certainly, we are quite focused as well on the kind of hardware, processors, systems, payloads, new approaches to advanced manufacturing to enhance the operational efficiency of satellite development. But I think central to this also, as we work with many companies, the downstream efforts is equally important so that it marries and does justice to the R&D and R&T of the satellite programs that we see. Many of this comes about from our small, medium enterprises. A lot of our young startups are very much engaged in downstream activities, and we're quite heartened to also realize that I think they see that central to their business plans and strategy is the core applications. Now, when it comes to applications, that's a very wide field of view. I don't think there's any heavy specific ones that we look at on double down on. But more importantly, I think those that have a certain degree of analytics, have a lot of functionalities in data, ML, of course, AI built into it. I think these are quite a horizontal today that we see as a must-have, right? And these are things that coupled together with the hardware and the satellite infrastructure that is already in space, if they can connect the dots and provide that additional service provision in downstream activities, in image processing, in satellite communications, IoT, cybersecurity, you know, and anything in between that helps connectivity and that whole digitalization stack, I think those companies are those, or the areas of focus are those that will be quite interested to look at. And so,
your thoughts on where satellite and space industry is heading?
We always have this view, and it's a view of looking at things growing at a very fast pace. Certainly, we look at things faster, better, cheaper. With this democratization of space and satellite technologies, no doubt things will get smaller. The barriers of entry are lower, and I think that's a given, and our industry is quite well-versed and comfortable with this. So with that in mind, there will be, of course, more constellations of small satellites that will be up in space. But certainly that will be not without various mergers and acquisitions. People will come together. We have seen that in the past couple of years now, of how the space sector in itself has harmonized and rationalized the different large conglomerates that have started to throw up many satellites, as well as medium enterprises that have started to come into the fray. Ultimately, the space sector, if you are touching hardware, is very capex intensive. It's not cheap, you know, to put up and maintain large constellations. And I think there's certainly a large enough pie as well to share. That being said, the coming together of big companies, you know, to close ranks, to consolidate, probably is what we're going to see quite soon. And not just in the small satellite ecosystem, but largely across, I think, the entire value chain. I mean, we see the larger communications players as well starting to also consolidate and hunker down, because there's a lot of disruption. But at the same time, the needs, you know, there's a lot of burgeoning needs of data around the world. And I think that huge demand and significant demand is also placing a lot of strain, right? And maybe even more so is the pace of innovation again. And I come back to that piece, because the rate of innovation and the rate of disruption is far faster, I think, than the rate of replacement of a large geostationary satellite, or, you know, installing a new payload, testing, development. I mean, we in the satellite industry always want to be really good at what we do. You know, there's heavy redundancy. It's the best product that we send out there. But we tell startups, you know, today it's sometimes time to market is quite important as well. And the consumer cannot wait, right? So if they can find a better, more cost-optimized solution, they'll move, right? And this is, I think, in this current generation of our planet Earth, you know, we just have to move with the times. So with that being said, I think that's why a lot of the giants, I think, will probably consolidate, and maybe not even consolidate just with themselves. Right? I think we are seeing in big programs around the world starting to open up and encourage large enterprises to partner small enterprises and small companies. Right, so it's not just startups with startups. You know, you are looking at MNCs tapping into all these unproven ground and technology of young companies, and I think that I see is something of the way forward.
Will Singapore as a nation expand their use of satellite capabilities?
I think today Singapore is quite comfortable in terms of satellite technology usage. Right, we cover a very wide span. I mean, we cover the remote sensing areas, and that, I mean, is for a whole swath of activities, you know, civil dual use programs. But largely because of the improvement and enhancement of remote sensing technologies today, we are seeing a lot more uptake by commercial companies. Actually, in the past, you know, this domain was maybe with governments, right? But today, a lot of commercial companies are starting to see the value of sharper, more high resolution images. That together with the availability or increasing availability of SAR or radar pictures, especially in Singapore's area where we are tropical climate, you know, a lot of clouds. We see probably that is an area that we want to expand, provide more services there, because, you know, in the past we have always challenged, I think, with optical challenges, you know, but today with radar capabilities being enhanced, and that is an area probably useful to exploit. The other places, I guess, we will continue to widen is GNSS in navigation. So precision mapping, you know, being able to go point to point. GNSS has shown to be quite an important element, not just for national or country requirements, but today the architecture can be built upon with a lot more potential commercial opportunities that, again, adjacent industries who leverage on precision mapping capabilities can enhance. Right? So all that is coming to the foreground, because access to geospatial and accurate geospatial GNSS data is becoming more mainstream, right? And that just benefits a very, very large consumer base that covers many, many, many sectors. So it diffuses to many industries. Right? The last piece, I guess, is on communications. We are quite glad Singapore covers all pieces of it, because comms is a backbone, right, of almost everything that we have. Over COVID, we've seen that very well demonstrated. Today, with satellite communications, or more efficient use of satellite communications, I think that we probably will have faster, better coverage. But I guess we do perhaps say where we would widen specifically, maybe in the area of comms, connectivity within the airborne and seaborne space is an area that we probably could do more in, not just because we are trying to do so for ourselves, but because, again, global demand for air travel, for smart digital ports, you know, these are things which will also drive a lot of economic activities that the satellite value chain can also grab. Airborne connectivity will be important for aircraft, for more internet availability across travel. And seaborne connectivity is similar in nature, and it's not just shipborne connectivity, you know, amongst, you know, cruise vessels, tankers, and all that, but it's ship-to-shore activities, potentially even even enabling a more efficient port infrastructure, right, across Singapore. And I think we see a few key cities, you know, already dabbling in this area to enhance their efficiencies in maritime traffic, right? So these are a few areas that I think Singapore will, like, enhance and move forward on in the near term.
SSTL, you've been active with MOUs.
So, Kevin, we've had a suite of MOUs and framework agreements that we continue to either sign or enhance with various countries and partners. Case in point, I think most recently at our Global Space and Technology Convention in February, we had a range of partnerships. Some of them were enhanced, some MOUs. We had them with Australia, with Poland, with the UK. And I thought that maybe just case in point, just to highlight the UK one, because that was more of an enhancement of an initiative that was launched 2 years ago, where we partnered the UK STFC, Science Technology Facilities Council, to build a bridge for both countries to leverage off both sides of the coin in terms of capabilities, enable not just funding to flow, but also companies and their technologies as well. I think thematically, we found a very good sweet spot because we are looking at new areas in, you know, disaster management, response, climate change, and we see that companies on both sides are quite eager to engage and build new solutions, right, to support some of these response efforts. Now, the UK has a range of core capabilities that is very, very useful for our Singapore companies. They have a lot of testing facilities. The R&D is world-class. I mean, similar to many other countries, but I would say that I think this was a unique bridge because it also facilitated our Singapore companies to not just be exposed to the UK ecosystem, but even beyond that to the ESA and the European ecosystem. So in a way, it was a double bridge. It got them to springboard a little bit further, and vice versa as well. The European companies, space companies who wanted to come to Singapore or through Singapore for Asia could use that bridge as well, go through the UK, enhance their effectiveness, their program, talent, build a stronger business case, and then come across to Singapore as well. I thought to highlight that because that is also a very good case in point of how a successful initial, you know, MOU has, you know, enhanced itself and grown, you know, strength to strength, and we certainly want to build on it over the years.
What decisions need to be made to make space more sustainable?
I think, Kevin, this is a very tough one. Certainly, it's a common thread, and all countries, spacefaring nations, or even emerging space economies are equally keen on one hand to expand, but also understand the challenges that it poses, right? And when you talk about sustainability in space, you know, I think there's two parts of it. One is the hardware piece, space debris, you know, and a lot of space situation awareness, you know, SSA becoming more important and what we can sense make in orbit as one case in point. But actually, the other piece I think that we would want to morph, maybe from a Singapore perspective here, is the economic case and the economic business case for companies that are dabbling in space, right? It's typically been for the big boys, you know, for large government organizations to partake in, and to be quite frank, that element may not have changed very much. What has potentially changed is that the commercial sector has become a lot more innovative, and I think governments have embraced the notion that with commercial backing, you know, you can move 10 times faster. And that's great, but at the same time, you do need to ensure that you start off on the right foundation. The sustainability piece, I think, really stems very much on what various countries really need, right? And just again, like a startup business plan, right? You don't build the tech and then find a solution. I think every country and every region is unique in their satellite space application needs and requirements. And based on that, I think that if you build a case for space for your own unique requirements as a starting point, and ensure that you have all the key ingredients, you know, government agencies, industry, academia participating at the beginning, you probably will have a more resilient case for a long-term space initiative or space program. You don't want to leave out things, and that then I suspect it will be a lot more sustainable, and you see more companies take on more risks, try and tinker, and then you would have a more robust satellite ecosystem.
Jonathan, thank you very much. We wish you every success.
Thank you so much, Kevin. I appreciate it, and I appreciate the opportunity. Thank you.